All right, the book of Proverbs for today. Book of Proverbs. We've entered a whole new different section of the Bible. We've gone through the law. We've gone through the books of history. And about the time you get to Job, we get into the books of poetry and wisdom. And the book of Proverbs is included in that. So the previous book, the book of Psalms, many of the Psalms were written by David. And so now Proverbs, coming after the Psalms, it's only appropriate that most of the Proverbs written by Solomon. And if I could have you turn to any one particular proverb that could encapsulate the entire book, it's kind of a difficult thing. Understand, the book of Proverbs is a collection of wise sayings. And they cover all sorts of different areas of life. But if I could have you turn to one place that could encapsulate the entire book of Proverbs, it'd be Proverbs chapter 1, the very first chapter of the book of Proverbs. And verse number 7, Proverbs 1. And verse number 7, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." That's the verse that if you could sum up the entire book of Proverbs, it'd be that verse right there. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." This is a collection of wise sayings of Solomon. Of course, when we read about Solomon, if you remember, when we talked about the books of history, God blessed Solomon and told Solomon, "You name it, it's yours for the asking. What would you like? You could have anything." Now imagine if we had that sort of a gift. If God said, "It's yours for the asking." And out of all the things Solomon could have asked for, he could have asked for riches. He could have asked for more power and more influence. He could have asked for popularity. He could have asked for all sorts of things. He asked for wisdom. And this was something that was pleasing to God. Because as we'll talk about later, God is wisdom. God is the source of all wisdom. And understand, wisdom and knowledge are not interchangeable. They're not the same. Amen. There's a lot of people in this world that have so much knowledge, but it's like I said, they're so open-minded, their brains fall out.
Yeah.
They have so much knowledge, but they have no wisdom. Understand? Knowledge is simply having the information up in here. But wisdom is the practical application of that knowledge. You know, there's a reason why when somebody goes to flight school, when they teach them how to fly, before they give them their license, their pilot's license, they actually have to fly a plane. Because there's some things in the classroom that you can study and you can have all up in here, but it's a whole different ball game when you're actually put in that situation. It's one thing to know what to do in an emergency, in an airplane, and it's another thing to actually be in that situation.
Yeah.
So understand, knowledge and wisdom are not the same. Wisdom is the principal thing. Now understand, knowledge is a great thing. I think we all ought to be learning. School should not stop after 12th grade. School ought to be a lifelong process. You ought to always be learning. Can I tell you, as a child of God, you ought to always not only be in this book, but be a reader of other books. Be a reader, right? What is it in school? Readers are leaders. But there's some things that you can consistently learn throughout your life. And knowledge is a good thing, but if you never learn how to use that knowledge, oh, knowledge can then be a dangerous thing. Understand, in that way, it's very much like a firearm. When I was a kid, my parents always taught me to have a healthy fear of a firearm, a healthy respect. It's a tool of incredible power, and it can be used for good. It can be used to for recreation or for sport. It can be used to provide food, but it, at the same time, it's also a very deadly thing. It can be a very dangerous thing if you don't know how to use it. And so understand, you can know all the different parts of a firearm. You can understand how it all works, the mechanics of it all. But if you don't know how to apply it and use that knowledge to be safe, it can be a very dangerous thing. And so the book of Proverbs, the whole purpose, why was this book written? Why would God include this book in His Word? Well, it's to teach people how to attain wisdom. You know, wisdom is not something you're naturally born with.
Right.
It's a God-given gift. You know, it pleases God when we ask for wisdom. There's no shame in that sort of thing. A lot of people are just too proud to ask.
Yeah.
They're too proud to ask for wisdom, and it's those same people who will never get it.
Yeah.
But the book of James tells us, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not. Understand what that means. It says, if you lack wisdom, you can ask God, and God will give you that wisdom liberally. He's not going to just sparingly mete it out. He's going to dump it upon you.
Yeah.
And then it says, he upbraideth not. And that's the part that I really like. He's not going to shame you for it.
Yes, sir.
He's not going to chastise you for asking for wisdom. It's a very honorable thing. It pleases the Lord. We see with Solomon, when he asked for wisdom, he had to admit to God that he lacks. And so when you get to that humble place that you realize that you don't have the wisdom you think you need, and you ask the Lord for that wisdom, he'll give it to you, and he's very pleased with that sort of thing. For Solomon, out of all the things Solomon could have asked for, he asked for wisdom. And because this pleased the Lord, he gave Solomon riches and power and influence and all those other things. Because wisdom was the principal thing. You see that phrase all throughout the book of Proverbs. So it teaches people how to attain wisdom, discipline. Oh, this is a thing that is severely lacking, self-discipline. You know, a lot of people want to be their own boss, but I don't think many people could handle being their own boss.
Yeah.
Because there's no self-discipline. And just a prudent life. And also, the purpose of this book is to teach people to do what is right, just, and fair. Understand there are some principles in the book of Proverbs that God teaches us that lead to a pretty good life. They lead to just some practical things. I'll give you an example. One of the things that the book of Proverbs teaches is not to be surety for somebody. Don't co-sign on a loan. No matter how well you know that person, no matter how close you are to that person, if you're family with them, it's not a good idea. And that is just practical life advice. But not only does it give you practical things, it gives you things to teach you what is right and what is wrong and what is just and what is fair. The purpose of this book is also to apply wisdom to daily life. And you can live in wisdom. You can exercise that wisdom. It's like any other muscle. It needs to be exercised. And you can exercise your wisdom from day-to-day life. Solomon wrote these for the most part. That's our author here. We could divide the book of Proverbs into six sections. The first section is chapters 1 to 7. Chapters 1 to 7, and these Proverbs are mostly written to sons, from a father to a son. Now, that doesn't mean we can't glean from that, but understand, we could say, if you're a child of God, the Bible is inspired of God. These are His words. Solomon may be the penman. They may have his sort of flair and his flavor, but really these are God's words. And so while Solomon may have primarily written these to his son, God wrote them to his children. And so we can apply them. That's chapters 1 to 7. And then chapters 8 and 9, it's all about the praise of wisdom and how great wisdom is to have, and the benefits of wisdom. So that's your second section, chapters 8 and 9, the praise of wisdom. Then you get chapters 10 through 19. This talks about the folly of sin, just the foolishness of sin and iniquity. That's chapters 10 through 19. Chapters 20 through 29 gives you warnings and instructions. You see how it's starting to flow? We're giving you instructions for children, for sons, and just general instructions. And then it moves on to how valuable wisdom is and how foolish sin is. And now here's some warnings and instructions. It's building. Chapter 30 is real unique. These are the words of Agur. And then verse 6, or the sixth part of Proverbs, rather, chapter 31. These are the words of King Lemuel. King Lemuel, some Bible scholars think that is also Solomon. I kind of fall on that line as well. But our key verse here is, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." When you read the Proverbs, you're going to find different patterns. You'll see contrasts, and that's what we see here. We make a statement here, and then it uses that little word "but" to show that what follows is the opposite of that. Now, this isn't consistent all throughout the book of Proverbs, because sometimes it'll say a statement A, and then it'll make another statement to reinforce A. Understand? So when you're reading the Proverbs, understand there's different patterns that you're reading. But here we see a contrast. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, this is a lot of people will sometimes get this mixed up. What does this mean? The fear of the Lord. Am I to be scared of God? The Bible so many times says to be not afraid or to fear not. And here we're supposed to be afraid of the Lord. Well, it's not talking about, it's not like being scared, but can I put it this way? It's a healthy respect and a reverence for God.
Right.
That's what the fear of the Lord is. It's a healthy respect and a reverence for him. Understand, in the Old Testament, what they would do, God literally dwelt on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. And there was just an understanding, while God loved his people and while God took care of his people, you did not just appear before the Lord in a sinful condition. You didn't just appear in front of God's presence as you were. There were certain things that had to happen. There was a reason why there was a veil between the holy place and the holy of holies. Understand those, you might have seen pictures in Sunday school as a kid of the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant, and you see the gold and the cherubims, and that's not really what it would have been like. There was actually a cloak that went over the Ark of the Covenant. It not even to be looked upon. So understand that there ought to be a healthy respect and reverence for God. This is a humble spirit before God. Some people they are not humble before the Lord.
Yeah.
They are so proud, and they will shake their fist at God. And like the Israelites in the wilderness, they'll tempt God. They test him. And think about that. I've been doing a lot of study about the children of Israel in the wilderness on their way to the promised land. And after seeing how God takes care of them, after seeing how God brings them through the Red Sea on dry land, they start to complain. They complain about water. They get to Marah and the water is contaminated. It's not good to drink. And they start to complain. And they forgot what God had done for them.
Yeah.
And how God provided their escape from Egypt. And not only that, but he drowned their enemies in the sea. And so now they think they're going to die of contaminated water, that no water to drink. And God gives them that sweet water, that pure water. It's that crisp, cool, and refreshing. And God took care of them. And then several months into their journey, they run out of food and they start to complain. And God brought us out here to starve to death. It was better that we never left Egypt. There was no respect for God, no reverence for God. Don't you think if God brought them through the Red Sea and also gave them clean water to drink, he'd provide food for them?
Yes.
And so he does. And yet again, they return to complaining. And here's what's mind-boggling to me. The next thing they complain about, they run out of water. They run out of water. It's not even that there's contaminated water. There's no water to be had. And you would think they would have learned their lesson that God provides water in the wilderness. And so many times God says, "Why do my people tempt me?" They're testing me. They're testing God's patience. Now look, God is long-suffering. God is so patient with us. But some people try to push his patience to the very edge. And I don't want to be that way.
Yes, sir.
That's the fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
Having that healthy reverence for God. I'm not going to tempt him. I'm not going to test him. This is a desire to please God. That's the beginning of wisdom. You want wisdom? Well, you can start with just having a healthy fear and respect for God and just a desire to please him. Because look, if that's in your heart, if that is your heart's goal and your heart's focus, then you're already on the right track for wisdom. You can't go wrong desiring to please the Lord. Now we're humans. We do mess up. Sometimes what we think will please God is not always what really will please God. But at least you're there. You're on the right track. That's why it says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. It just seems like there are people that wisdom is clear instruction is right there in front of them. It's right there on a silver platter, and they just miss it. And it's like, what's the saying? They can't see the forest for the trees,
yeah.
Right? They miss it because it's right there in front of them, but that's not how they see wisdom, because they're focused on what their definition of wisdom is and what their definition of knowledge is. So different themes you see through the book, obviously wisdom. But you know, that's not the only theme in the book of Proverbs. We also see relationships between husbands and wives, between family, but also between strangers and between even enemies and allies. We see relationships. Speech is a big part of the book of Proverbs. The Bible has so much to say about what you say.
Right.
The Bible is so clear on our speech in the book of Proverbs. We also see work. We ought to work. Work is not a dirty four-letter word. God created work.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will get this, they'll get this messed up. Well, it wasn't for Adam and Eve, we wouldn't have to work. And that's not true. Understand, before Adam and Eve sinned, before the curse was brought upon the ground, they still had to work.
Right.
God didn't create Adam and Eve just to dwell into this garden. He made man for the purpose to dress and to keep it.
Yeah.
It was still going to be work. Work is a healthy thing. But there is a balance. Because I know people who will work themselves to death and will never stop to just rest and reflect on God. I wrote about that in the bulletin. If you haven't read it yet, you ought to read that. but they don't take the time to rest and reflect, and they work themselves to an early grave. Some of the most sick people I know in my life, some of the most unhealthy people I know in my life are these people who don't believe in taking a break. They just work and work and work and work. And you know what? You could do a whole lot more work if you lived longer.
Right.
But then there's the opposite side of that. There are the people that say, well, I want to be healthy, and so I'm just not going to work this week. Or I'm just not going to work this month, and I'll just maybe do a little bit here and there. And they never work. There is a balance, folks. Yeah. God created the universe and everything in it in 6 literal days. Right. 6 24-hour periods. You know, God could have done it all in one. He could have just spoke it all into, but he did it in 6 days. And then the Bible goes on to record the 7th day.
Yeah.
And this is interesting, because on the 7th day, God didn't create anything.
Yeah.
Why would the Bible record the 7th day? God didn't create anything on the 8th day, or the 9th day, or the 10th day. Why does the 7th day get a special mention? Because on those 6 days, God created all things. And on that 7th day, he rested. Now, God doesn't get tired. Can I tell you what that word rest means? It means to reflect.
Yeah.
He took a step back and just reflected on all the goodness. He reflected on the trees and the oceans and the skies and all the creatures. And he reflected on mankind. And on that 7th day, he declared, it's very good. He looked at the work of his own hands and reflected and said, it's very good. And he did this for a pattern for us. 6 days, it's good to work. But there ought to be a time set apart where we just step back and reflect on God's goodness. Hey, you understand, this is why God was so serious about this sort of thing. So much so that for so long, Israel had not kept the Sabbath day. For so long, they just worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and they never took time to reflect on God's goodness. And so God decided to collect all that time at once. 70 years. You look at that. 70 years. That translates to all that time that they let another 7th day just go by without reflecting on God. Now they had 70 years to do nothing but think about God's goodness.
Yeah.
And so, not one of those people that said, I'm not the Seventh Day Adventist that says that Saturday ought to be the Sabbath. But what I'm saying is the principle applies here. We ought to take a time to just step away from our busyness, step away from what we're doing to reflect on God's goodness. That's what I'm saying. So we see that. That's another theme in the book of Proverbs. And then success. What does success look like in life? Success is not measured by wealth.
Right.
Success is not measured by friendships and popularity. Success is measured by finding the will of God for your life and doing it.
Right.
Obedience to God, that is true success in life. So we'll go through the book of Proverbs here real quick. We see wisdom for young men. We see the purpose of Proverbs. It outlines what the purpose of this book is. And then it talks about the voice of wisdom. And it talks about how wisdom is from God. The Bible talks about it. God used wisdom in creating the universe. So understand, if wisdom is something that God would employ in his creation, and he's God, then how much more enticing is it for us to use wisdom in our lives? Understand, if God used wisdom to create, then don't you think it would be a good idea for us to use some wisdom in our lives? We see that wisdom is extremely valuable. You can't compare wisdom's price to silver or gold or rubies or anything this world has. Wisdom is so much more valuable. You understand, money can get you pretty far, but it can't take you everywhere.
Yeah.
Money can't buy you a cure when you've got that disease and the doctors are scratching their heads and they don't know what to do. Money can't buy everything. Okay, so wisdom is so much more valuable. Wisdom can be learned. If you think that, well, I'll just never be wise, there is hope for you.
Yeah.
Wisdom is something that can be learned. It's something that God can give you. We see there's warnings against sexual sin, warning against foolish actions. Wisdom guards against immorality. It gives good advice. And can I tell you, wisdom is its own reward. Too many people are searching for wisdom and what wisdom can do for me. But can I tell you, friends, wisdom is its own reward.
Yeah.
That is the end goal, is to have wisdom, not so you can have all these other... Wisdom is not a means to an end. While wisdom may result in all sorts of blessings and things like that, wisdom is to be attained just for the sake of having it.
Yeah.
Then we see wisdom is personified as a woman. I think that's very intentional, because some of the most foolish people I know are men. Have you ever noticed? It's never the women that are like, here, watch this.
Yeah.
Men have been known to do some pretty foolish things. Wisdom is personified as a woman. She's prepared her house. She's prepared a big feast, and she's standing at the gates of the city. You understand what that means in Bible times? That is where everyone goes in and everyone goes out. And she is standing at the gate where everybody meets, the town square, we could say. And she's crying out, come, please, my house is open. I've got this banquet ready. Please come in. She's literally begging people to come in. That's wisdom. God opens up his word and offers his wisdom for the taking. And how many times have we walked past the gate and ignored the voice of wisdom? When God clearly gives us instructions on how to live, and God gives us clear instructions on wisdom, and we've just passed by the gates. So we see that. We see wisdom for all people. So the next few chapters, they discuss different situations to apply wisdom. Talks about money. The book of Proverbs talks about being a good steward and how to take care of money. It talks about relationships between one another. It talks about speech. It talks about work. It talks about pride. Oh, there are some big warnings against pride. You know, the Bible says that there's a phrase in the Bible that people often take and they misapply it. And I'm going to teach you this phrase. The Bible will sometimes say, take a look at these six things. No, seven things. And things like that. What the Bible is saying in that instance is, this list could go on and on and on and on. But I'm just giving you these. That's what that means. It'll say these three things, but four things. Or these five things. Yea, six things. Well, one of the things that the Bible says, these six things the Lord hates, yea, seven, are an abomination. And I've heard some people say, well, that means there's really only six or seven things that are really abominations to God. Everything else just slips by. And that's not true.
No.
God hates all sin.
Yes, sir.
No matter how small it is, God still hates it. It's still reprehensible to him. When it says that phrase, it means this is just a small list. But the number one thing on that list, the very first thing that's mentioned, is a proud look. Oh, God hates pride. Because that's what it was back in the garden. When Satan tempted Adam and Eve with this fruit, understand it wasn't just because it was a delicious looking fruit. I don't know about you, but I've never been tempted with fruit. Okay, I've never seen fruit sitting there on the table and going, oh, I really shouldn't. But it looks so good. That's just not me. Now, if it's a donut, that'd be a little bit of a different situation. But what Satan was tempting Eve with was, you eat this fruit and you will know good and evil for yourself. Right now, Eve, you are innocent. You don't even know what evil is. God knows. And God is trying to keep you from knowing this, because if you eat this fruit, you'll know what he knows. God is trying to keep something away from you. And was that true? Yeah. God was, and for a good reason.
Yes, sir.
You know, ignorance is bliss in this case.
Yes.
But she ate of that fruit, gave it to Adam, and he ate of the fruit. And what they did by eating that fruit is they essentially were saying, I don't want to live by how God says I should live. I want to make the decision for myself. I want to decide what is right and what is wrong. And so that's pride. It's wanting to live independent from God. And here's the scary thing. If you want to live independent from God, God will let you.
Yeah.
Until one day you will die and you will live eternally independent from God.
Yeah.
Out of his presence forever. So you see wisdom for all people. The last part of Proverbs, we see wisdom for leaders. Many of these Proverbs were directed at the king. Can I tell you why? That's because even a king needs wisdom.
Yeah.
Nobody is so high. Nobody has such a position that they just don't need God's wisdom.
Yeah.
Even the leader of the nation needs wisdom. I hope you pray for the leaders of our nation. I hope you pray that they have wisdom, that God gives them of wisdom, because heaven knows they're not going to find it on their own. Okay? So I hope you're praying for them. We put our leaders in the prayer list every week for a reason. And I hope you're praying that they will, that God will give them wisdom. Can I tell you, I truly believe our nation would be in such a worse state if it weren't for Christians praying for wisdom. Because while they do foolish things all the time, I do think there is a certain degree of wisdom that God does give these people, because without it, we would no longer exist. I truly believe that. And the day that we quit praying for wisdom for our leaders, you can just find somewhere else to live, because it will not last for very much longer. Then we get to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, this one is really directed at ladies. But can I tell you, men, this is also, don't just skip over it and say, well, this is not for me. This is for being a woman of virtue. You know, you can be a man of virtue.
Yeah.
You know, it says a virtuous woman who can find. Well, can you find a virtuous man? They're just as rare. And so some of the different qualities we see of the virtuous woman. Understand, these are to be taken as a whole, not just one piece here and there. They all work together. We see that she is hardworking. She's diligent. She gets up. The Bible talks about she gets up early before the sun, and she feeds her family. And she is trustworthy. She makes business decisions for the family.
Yeah.
She buys a field and sells it at her discretion. Understand, there is a certain amount of trust that it takes to get to entrust somebody with a piece of property. I gotta brag on my wife. I'm always telling her, you are the Proverbs 31 woman. You are right there. Can I tell you, there are times when I'll drop her off at the store and she says, what do you want? And rather than just tell her what I want, I say, you know what I want. Use your discretion. I trust you. We see that she cares for everyone in her house, from the small to the tall. She's wise. She's good with money. She knows how to handle it. She's kind and charitable. Understand, being virtuous doesn't have to do with just that knowledgeable wisdom, but that wisdom of the heart. She's kind. She speaks peace, and she's charitable. She's a good planner. There are some people in this world that's just not their forte.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to plan. And failure to plan is planning to fail.
Yeah.
But she has a good reputation. So much so that when her husband goes out to the gates, everybody looks up to him because she's the one that's propping him up.
Yeah.
There's some men in this world that are worthless except for their wife. They say that the man is the head of the home, but the woman is the neck that holds up the head.
Yeah.
And if the neck is and the neck controls where it turns and where it goes. Okay, so understand that she's got a good reputation. People speak well of him because of her. And she speaks kind words. She's edifying in her speech. Now, listen, the Proverbs, I encourage you. There's 31 chapters in the book of Proverbs. And that could correspond to our month. There's 30 days, sometimes 31 days in a month. And so I would encourage you, if you're looking to get some wisdom, read a chapter a day. My wife has read a chapter of Proverbs every day for close to 20 years. Now I wish I had that sort of discipline. I bounce from place to place to place, but every day she does her normal Bible study, but she's always reading a chapter out of Proverbs. And I'll tell you, that is a really good way to get some wisdom, to get it hammered into your mind what God finds pleasing and what's going to be a good end for you is to study the book of Proverbs in that way. So that's the challenge for March. As it comes up here real soon, read a chapter of Proverbs each day and see what, and the whole time ask the Lord to give you wisdom. Because if you don't, you'll read through the book of Proverbs and say, well, that applies to me. I'm good at this. I don't really need that. We all fall short.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we could all use these things. Let's go to the Lord in prayer, and we'll go to our worship hour.